When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, this is James Mercer from The Shins.
This is Shirley Manson.
This is Lo Tullis, co-founder of The Cure.
This is Huey Lewis giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back with an exciting second season. We peel back the layers on music's most iconic hits with legendary artists like The Killers, Heart, The B-52s, Violent Femmes, Jewel, Huey Lewis, Modern English, and more. To keep the music flowing, we'll be sprinkling in classic episodes from our archives between each new one. So check out The Story Behind the Song wherever you get your podcast.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
A nice coffee. I've got a nice lunch burrito. I'm like, my interview burritos are sorted out.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org. Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network, thank you so much, as always, making your way here, checking out the series. Hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews that we put out every single week. That's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to keep you up to date on your favorite artists, discover some new ones, and know what's happening in the music world. Of course, you can subscribe anywhere you get your podcasts from, including iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, Podchaser, NPR, YouTube for the video version, or again, anywhere you like to get your podcast from. Today, my guest, Tom Morello. We're going to be talking about the Atlas Underground Fire. That's his continuation of what he calls his Sonic Conspiracy with artists, this time that include Chris Stapleton, Fantagram, Damian Marley, Mike Posner, just to name a few. The Rage Against the Machine guitarist tells us about the record being an emotional life raft during the darker days of the pandemic, searching for the future of the electric guitar, and his work getting women musicians out of Afghanistan through his Girls with a Guitar program. Now, Morello also talks about covering AC/DC's Highway to Hell with Eddie Vedder and Bruce Springsteen, and rehearsing with Rage Against the Machine for their rescheduled reunion show. So let's do it, discussing the Atlas Underground Fire. It's Kyle Meredith with Tom Morello.
Hello, how's it going? How are you, sir?
And you're back with a brand new record. It's called the Atlas Underground Fire.
That is correct.
Which, with the title, obviously, a few years ago, we had the Atlas Underground. Is this further in the series? Are we looking at a sequel? How are you approaching it?
This is the sister record, and the thing that the records share, they share a number of things. One is it is a collaborative endeavor. And on this record, we've got from Damian Marley to Bruce Springsteen, Eddie Vedder, Sama Abdul Hadi, grandson Mike Posner, Femme, Bring Me the Horizon, Fantagram, Chris Stapleton, among others. And so it's a, the whole concept of the Atlas Underground is to a sonic conspiracy and basically finding a way for the instrument that I love most, the electric guitar, to have a future and not just a past. So by making interesting collaborations with artists new and old, forging a new kind of like sort of sonic landscape for the guitar to play around in.
When I saw the title too, with the addition of the word fire, I thought, oh, is he going for, are we going to get like four more, three more with the elements that go along with this? Is it now a series?
One never knows, but it's a project that, I greatly enjoyed making the first Atlas Underground record, which was a creative endeavor, an artistic creative endeavor. This Atlas Underground record was much more of like sort of a life raft and an antidepressant during a time of great anxiety and tumult. The record was made exclusively during lockdown. And while, I was sort of alone in the bunker of my studio, it was a global collaboration of artists. I mean, from Brazil to Palestine, to Sweden, to New Jersey, to Nepal, to the UK, and to Jamaica, artists were, contributing.
Yeah, I think in another interview or something, or one of those places, you called yourself a drowning man going into this. That sounds rough. Obviously,
it was. I mean, it was. First of all, I mean, both creatively and personally. Creatively, it was the first time since I was 17 years old where there was not music. I had always been writing, performing, recording, and there was this sort of endless horizon of not that staring me in the face. And then, you know, I have a studio. I have a nice studio at my home, but I don't know how to run it. There's always an engineer that runs it. So I was. Had no way to make music. So inspiration struck in a very bizarre corner. That was Kanye West, who I read an article where he said that he had recorded vocals for a couple of his big hit records on the voice memo of his phone. Thought if it's good enough for Kanye West vocals, I could crank my Marshall stack up into that thing. And sure enough, I did. And it was just a matter of, turning the guitar on, putting the phone on a little folding chair, playing riffs into it and sending it to engineers, producers, and artists around the globe. And that's how the Atlas Underground Fire came to be.
It's amazing because it still sounds like a full studio production. Like I can't tell,
Crazy. I mean, 95% of the guitars in this record were recorded like on a folding chair with an iPhone. And that's the microphone is the microphone on my iPhone. On the one hand, like the riffs are what they are, but also technology these days, you're able to sort of take that file and make it into glorious works of
right
heavy metal rock and roll.
So the artist, like, well, I should say the song. What comes first, the artist or the song, and does the artist dictate the style that you're going for?
Yeah, it's both a solo record in that there's kind of a purity of vision and the guitar kind of guides it through these different genres, but it's very much a collaborative record and that the chemistry of the individual, working with individual artists on the individual songs helps transcend anything that I could have done on my own. So, just off the top of my head, like Chris Stapleton, we did a song called The War Inside. We talked for 2 hours on the phone about what it's like to try to keep our families alive and sane during this time. That became the therapeutic fodder for what became the lyrical content that we wrote the song with acoustic guitars. The Fantagram song, they had an idea of Josh and Sarah of a spooky sonic landscape that I contributed to with an array, a sonic palette of sounds to kind of flesh that out. Other songs like the Damian Marley song or the Bring Me the Horizon song, those are just big fat riffs that I came up with on that given day and sent them off to make big fat rock with.
Yeah, hearing Damian Marley against a riff like that, you know, like there's two things happening here. Playing against types. Like occasionally you get an artist like Damian, like it feels like he's playing against type. But on the songs you also mentioned, Chris Stapleton and the Fantagram tracks, I mean, does it give you those opportunities too to kind of go, it's not what you think it's going to be?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. There's sort of no rules in this Atlas Underground world other than that it's, you know, it is finding the future of the electric guitar, which I believe is a vibrant future. And it need not be, I mean, guitar players tend to be traditionalists and there's nothing wrong with that. And traditional guitar playing is fantastic, but I've never been content just doing that. This is my 21st studio album. And on every one of those records, I've tried to push the boundaries of what the electric guitar can be. And sometimes it's been making my guitar sound like barnyard animals or helicopter noises or R2-D2 or a DJ screechy scratching. Now, the challenge is to use the guitar as both a power riffing, guitar soloing thing, never give an inch on those, but also to find a home in different genres of music to help it become an instrument that it has as great a value in the future as it has had in the past.
Now, I brought up that Damian Marley too. The result is outstanding. But how did he take, like, was it easy? Did you get to feel like it was easy for him to adapt to that?
Yeah, I got to say, well, first of all, that was remote. He and I have played together before on stage. This was done completely remotely. And I sent him the tracks. I think he was in Jamaica at the time. And, you know, he just sent me back like that vocal, which is just, you know, it has that kind of that wise Rasta gravitas melded to this kind of Black Sabbath riff, you know, with bloody beetroots, this sort of Italian punk rock EDM production. That's the whole point. I mean, that really was the lifeline. Like during these days where every day felt like it was the same and, you know, with a tremendous amount of sort of medical and political anxiety, you know, in the world, all of a sudden I would get back that Damian Marley vocal and go like, it's possible that things are going to be okay.
And it's important to point that out too, because you know, there are large parts of this that's not a political record in the way that we traditionally think of it. And there are parts that absolutely are, you know, coming from, you know, where Damian Marley is coming from, from your own background. How do you say the name? Sama
Abdulhadi. Yeah. Sama is fine. Yeah.
Right. Right. I mean, coming from where they're coming from, as you're talking about, like, they were actually getting bombed in between making this track.
When Sama, she's a great young Palestinian, EDM artist and really groundbreaking. And when she was mixing that song, it was during the Israeli bombing of Palestine. There'd be days where she would kind of disappear or go off grid. And I'd be like, are you okay? I mean, that's not, and surprisingly, that's not the most unusual circumstance in which a song was recorded. Mike Posner, our song Naraka, Naraka is like the Hindu word for hell or like sort of the place of lost souls. Between the beginning and the end of the making of that song, he summited Mount Everest. And so some of those vocals were recorded at 25,000 feet in Nepal. and so here I am like in the bunker, like recording guitars into my phone and he's scaling Mount Everest and she's, you know, in the, you know, sort of dodging bombs. So it was, you know, in some ways it was a very cloister and isolated experience, but at the same time, global.
I mean, what amazing experiences to have part of the DNA of these songs. Yeah. Like, obviously that's a big part of your career, you know, writing about these moments that happen in time and in the world. But when you've kind of got an idea of a project, and again, with the base idea of a project, bringing the guitar into the future, how is the message just as important, or is that just something that sort of also comes naturally?
Yeah. Well, that's certainly in this song, the message was defined by the moment, you know, and it wasn't me sitting down and going, I must write 10 songs about Guatemalan labor union. It was just sort of like, this is a record about survival. I mean, literally, like, the making of the record is a way to sort of create a version of myself that I can live with. You know, that's really what was happening. But having said that, there's sort of three categories of songs on the record. One, importantly, are instrumental songs. Harlem Hellfighter, Charmed, I'm sure, the song with Prototype, and the Sama Abdulhadi song On the Shore of Eternity. It was an assertion that I am a musician, I am a guitarist, I am not just someone who's, you know, doing daycare and nursing home care and kennel care. It's like I'm really doing it, you know, at the top of my ability. I am playing guitar in a way that does not require lyrics in this particular instance to get the point across. Then there are the songs that are sort of pandemic related, from The War Inside with Chris Stapleton to the Bring Me the Horizon song, Let's Get the Party Started, which sounds like sort of a big rock anthem, but it's really the flip side of the depression coin, is if when faced with a mountain of anxiety, you know, you could party yourself to death. And that was sort of one of the options on the table for many people during this time. And then the third is the maybe the more bread and butter of, it's the uncompromising social justice political songs, The Grandson, Hold the Line, and Damian Marley's The Achilles List. The Achilles List, by the way, the name of that song comes from the 70s movie, The Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. It's the film where the apes are sort of like this slave caste and the fascist humans are keeping them down, but the humans keep a list called the Achilles List of the apes that are smart enough or courageous enough that they might be able to hit the Achilles heel of the society to bring it down. And that's a list that I always thought I might want to be on.
See, that's another one of the reasons I'm such a fan. There's always something further to dig on in these songs. I wouldn't have picked that up just on the surface. That's a cool moment. We were talking about Sama, and I thought to mention Girl with a Guitar is something you've been talking about lately because of what's going on in the Middle East right now. Is there an update with that?
Yeah, there's no new news. Like, Girl with a Guitar is a great organization that was founded by Larry Cordova, who, you know, he was like an 80s heavy metal musician who kind of found the religion of love and moved to Afghanistan to save these orphan street kids and these, you know, these girls who had endured pretty horrific traumas. And create a school for them and use music as a rehabilitation tool. And they're wonderful. And I did a song with them. They've covered some of my, you know, Night Watchman songs, which is wonderful. My son helped make a video for them. They're just like these wonderful kids, you know. And then when the Taliban took over, these girls got put on the kill list because, you know, they've played Western music and they had an American male teacher. And so their music school was destroyed, like all the instruments were destroyed, and they, you know, they're basically in hiding right now. And we've tried a number of ways to get them out, and that none of them have proved safe. So right now they're just currently they're safe, and but they're still there, and we're continuing to do everything we can to try to get them out, so you know, we can jam in person, hopefully.
Yeah, so. I mean, you're always doing important work, and that's extremely important work right there. So
yeah, I mean, I just like it's a really terrifying situation for them because Larry, the guy who's like runs the school, he just happened to be in Pakistan when the change happened. He was getting his like visa renewed or whatever. So they were alone when the change happened, and so it was really difficult to like, you know, and they're pretty scared. But they're all safe right now. So that's all we can hope for is just keep them safe until there's such a time where there's the opportunity to get them out safely.
I'll make an awkward transition out of that because that's some really important things. And I'm going to talk about something less important, like one of these songs, but, you know, one of the most, you know, as you talk about, you know, anti-tradition and how much it happens all over this record, one of the most traditional moments is you pulling a song from the past into the future. And of course I'm talking about Highway to Hell, and you've got Bruce Springsteen and you've got Eddie Vedder on it. So I sort of know the history on this because watching you with the E Street Band, I remember that moment where you all brought Ed up on stage in Australia, and it was such a great moment where all of my fanatic worlds were just colliding. But I started thinking, like, you know, knowing what I know about your history, so and like the Clash and punk rock and what it meant to you, were you an AC/DC fan at the same time? Was that immediate for you, or did that come later?
I started out as a heavy metal fan, and then when my friends who were heavy metal fans sort of transitioned to punk and left the metal behind, I did not. I kept firmly in both camps, and just sort of with my head in the sand, like whatever conflicts that may have arisen in my punk rock friends or my metal friends, I just said, I just love it all. It's going to be great. So AC/DC is one of the greatest bands of all time. But yeah, you're right. We did, Bruce and Eddie and I have a history with that song. And it started in 2014 when I was on tour with the E Street Band in Perth, Australia, the home of Bon Scott, where there is literally a highway that is known as the Highway to Hell. It's the highway that was from Bon's small town outside of Perth, where he lived, to the pub where he and his friends would just get blasted. And that song was written about a highway to hell in outside of Perth. But anyway, so I was visiting I wanted to pay my respects to his grave, which is there in Perth. And I went there at night, it was about 11 o'clock, and I couldn't find the grave. Surprisingly, it is not marked with an eternal flame or something like that. But out of the darkness comes this motorbike in a graveyard in the middle of the night. There's this heavyset fella with a German World War II helmet on and a t-shirt which reads, "I don't give a shit, but if I did, you're the one I'd give it to." And I'm like, that guy's going to know where Bon Scott's grave is. Sure enough, he does. And I pay my respects, and I see Bruce in the bar later that night. I'm like, do you think that there's any way that AC/DC and the E Street Band might overlap since we're here in Australia? And he was like, let me think about it. So we went to his room, started listening to the AC/DC catalog, and we began rehearsing Highway to Hell over the course of the next couple sound checks. Found ourselves in Melbourne. Eddie Vedder was there on a solo tour in Australia. And for me, like a light bulb went off, and I knocked on Bruce's dressing room door. I said, Bruce, we are in Australia, where AC/DC is king, where the song Highway to Hell is the unofficial national anthem of rock and roll liberation. What if we open the show with Highway to Hell with Eddie Vedder? And he was like, that sounds like a good idea. And we did, and it was an apex moment in the history of live music. Like, if you think you've seen people go ape shit at a concert, you haven't, because you weren't there on that night. It was so crazy. And so as I was finishing this record, you know, with all these great young artists, Grandson and Femme and Bring Me the Horizon, I wanted to make a song with my rock brothers. And I reflected back on that night of magical transcendence and said, you know, I put a track together. I sent it to Bruce with my fingers crossed. I said, remember that time when we like blew up the world with this jam? Are you down? And he did two vocal takes. Sounds like the king of rock and roll. Eddie did one, and there it is.
I think I remember hearing an interview or something from years back where Mike McCready was trying to talk Ed into covering bands like AC/DC, you know, Kiss, stuff like that. And back then Ed was like, no way.
Yeah.
Tom Morello doing it. That's what
Yeah. I'm not sure if he was conflicted or not. When I brought it up to him before he had heard the track, because I went to Bruce first, and Bruce sang it down. It sounded fantastic. And I called up Eddie. I'm like, hey, remember the time we did the thing? And I got it. And he's like, why don't you get Brian Johnson to do it? I'm like, that would be good, but remember the time when we did the thing? And I sent him the track, and he loved it. So that was very fortunate.
Yeah, it is. It's powerful. It sounds great. It sounds fantastic. You know, this whole thing. And again, through and through, you mentioned Grandson a couple of times. I didn't get to bring that up. I've become such a fan of him over the past few years. And you must be able to hear the lineage of what you've done and Rage what he's doing these days. I mean, that seems like that's so much part of his DNA.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He reached out to me a couple of years ago. I did a remix of his song Blood Water, and that's how we became acquainted. And I really, you know, really wanted to work with him. He's just a, you know, super smart, really inhabited by the Holy Spirit of rock and roll, and you know, wanting to use his rock power and his intellect to change the world. And that's you know, we could use more of that.
He's doing great work out there too. I mentioned Rage, and I'm only bringing it up real quick because there was going to be the reunion shows, I believe, right? And then
yes.
It's like, finally we're getting, no.
Yeah. We were, I think, 15 days away from the first show in 9 years or something like that. And, but we, you know, the US tour is rebooked for March of 2022. So fingers crossed that it's safe out there to play it.
Yeah, I mean, you all had been already done the rehearsals and everything.
We did 2 years ago. Now we're, you know, we'll have to reboot again. But you know, band sounded great then. The way those four people play together from the first rehearsal till, you know, March of 2020, it's always sounds just like that. So I'm confident that it'll be great if there are shows.
I'm looking forward to that when it happens. I will drive or fly wherever I need to go because I know that's a rare occasion when it comes around. In the meantime, this new record with the Atlas Underground Fire, the series, you know, now that we've got two, I'm calling it a series because I'm really just pushing you to do more of this. I love it so much.
I love the idea of this kind of collaboration. It's really, it's both solo record and collaborative record at the same time, and very freeing, and it allows me to kind of let go of a lot of my type A-ness in a way, both embrace it on the one hand and completely let go of it on the other hand to sort of the winds of creative chemistry. And that's something that's appealing.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on another successful run at it. I've had so much fun listening to it. So.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much, Kyle.
All right, Tom, thank you for taking the time today. This is fun as always.
My pleasure.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead. Download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
I'm going to back up to 2018. That was the last time that Tom and I spoke. And that time was about the first part of this record, this project, behind the album The Atlas Underground. That time saw him collaborating with folks like Marcus Mumford, Gary Clark Jr., Portugal the Man, and Steve Aoki. We also talked about Prophets of Rage, The Night Watchmen, some Audio Slave, Rage Against the Machine's 20th anniversary of the Battle of Los Angeles. So I'm going to include that one here as well. Part two of Kyle Meredith with Tom Morello.
Hello.
Congratulations on the Atlas Underground.
Thank you very much. It's been a lot of fun.
This seems like we'll start with the softball question here. I mean, it's the first full release under your own name. You didn't go for the Night Watchman or anything like that?
Because it's an electric guitar record. And the idea with this record was to create a sonic conspiracy with a diverse artist with the lofty goal of, you know, forging a brand new genre of rock and roll that combines, you know, Marshall Stack Fury and huge EDM drops. So it's a solo record in that I am the you know, a songwriter and the guitarist and the curator, but it's also a collaborative record in that I brought together, you know, 20 or so very diverse artists to, you know, on this mission to really make this unique new alloy for 2018.
You know, you talk about creating a new sound. You're no stranger to creating a new version of rock and roll. I mean, this is something you've done in the past. It seems like that sets the bar sort of at a certain point for you when you're looking at something like this.
Yeah, I mean, I love to challenge myself as a guitarist and as an artist. And, you know, I had never, growing up, I had never been a fan of electronic music or what my understanding of electronic music was. And when I discovered Knife Party and Bass Nectar and Skrillex and a few others that had grown up on Rage Against the Machine, I really heard in that music the kind of sonic power and the tension and release of some of my favorite, you know, rock and metal bands, and called those guys up and said, well, what if we replace your synthesizers with my electric guitar? We might be onto something, you know, unique. It's also important to me to this record serve as a Trojan horse for electric guitar playing in 2018, in that we've got a song, Every Step That I Take, which is the collaboration with Portugal the Man and Weefen. You know, it's kind of on the alternative rock charts and whatnot. And somebody told me the other day that it's been more than 10 years that an alternative rock charting song has had a guitar solo in it.
Oh my God. That's sad. Good for you, but that's sad.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it is sad, but I mean, that means there's work to be done, is right. The way I look at it. And by you know, without compromising one iota on the, you know, on the rock and roll and on the shredding guitar playing, but by melding it with interesting, uncompromising artists like Bass Nectar and Big Boy and Killer Mike and Wu-Tang Clan and Vic Mensa and Marcus Mumford and Rise Against and Steve Aoki to make these, you know, really like unique new versions of rock and roll for subsequent generations.
All these names, there's a few in there, especially, I guess, really a lot of them. I mean, it's a chance for them to paint with a sort of different paintbrush as well, too.
Exactly.
Did they feel like they all kind of fell into place? I mean, did anybody feel extra challenged on this that you noticed?
Yeah, well, each song came together in a different way. You know, like Gary Clark Jr. and I, he came over and we jammed for about 3.5 hours, just having a ball, just playing. And then I boiled that song down into 3.5 minutes, you know? And so that was just like sort of free form jamming. Other songs were more meticulously put together, where with the lead track, Battle Sirens with Knife Party, I sent them like a riff tape where there'd be, you know, like, here's 10 riffs and here's 10 crazy guitar noises, and use those, use your production techniques, but replace your electronics with my analog rock and roll guitar to create something that's, you know, like if my guitar playing were the Ansel Adams black and white photo, I want to make the smashed Picasso version of that. Something that's recognizable, but you hear it in an entirely different way.
And Marcus Mumford might be the most surprising of all the guests on here. So I'm a fan of Marcus, but, you know, as far as, you know, the further end of the spectrum to where everybody else is, it seems like you both kind of brought each other closer to your usual world, though.
Yeah. Well, Marcus, I mean, I've played some Night Watchman shows with Mumford & Sons. I'm a huge fan of his singing and his band, and we've overlapped on festivals through the years, and we're also rock dads who have a lot to talk about and drink about. So we, you know, we over a couple of FaceTime sessions wrote that song on two continents. He was in, you know, he was in the UK, and I was in actually three continents. I think there was South America was in there as well. But no, I'm a huge fan of his stuff. And then Josh from Fantagram, you know, produced that track, and to me, it's like it's a great meeting of all of our worlds.
Yeah, and you mentioned Gary.
And it also has a guitar solo,
right? And you mentioned guitar Gary Clark Jr. there too. Because when you think about the two of you, I mean, here's two guitar gods, and hear about a three-hour jam, it's still not the type of sound, type of song that I would expect out of that.
Yeah, well, that's not the record. I mean, people have made – I wanted to make a record that was conceptually, not sonically, the Hendrix of now. And what I mean by that is it's got to have extraordinary guitar playing. It's got to have – one thing that Hendrix had was he had songs that were – connected with the radio and songs that were he I want to inject my, you know, inflict my guitar vision on, you know, 2018. And then also the, you know, the genre that Hendrix dealt in was blues rock, and millions of guitar players have made blues rock records. No one's yet made a record, you know, like with me and Gary Clark Jr. that rocks in the particular way that this song and this album rocks.
Would I be too far out when because I was thinking about there. I can hear seeds of this record in like Audioslave's Hypnotize. That one came to mind.
Sure, Sure, sure. It's been in my mind for a while. Like I produced a couple songs on a Crystal Method record back in the day on their record Tweekend. I did a song with Prodigy, you know, maybe almost 20 years ago. And I remember in those sessions thinking, like this hasn't been done great yet. Like we were sort of circling around it, you know, on those songs. And I felt like this real potential to use this, like my kind of 70s riff rock meets, you know, crazy R2-D2 meets shredding guitar playing with these huge drops and beat that, you know, it really stuck in my mind. And it was, you know, some years ago. I've been working on this record for, you know, clandestinely for some time. And, you know, it was a metal friend of mine turned me on to, you know, Knife Party and Skrillex. And I was like, that's when the light bulb blew. And I was like, now's the time to, you know, like, concentrate all my efforts to really make something that's a, you know, like a forward-looking statement for the electric guitar.
So how much control did you have over the lyrics, too? Because I feel like if an artist knows that they're working with Tom Morello, it sort of puts you in a frame of mind what you're going to be singing about.
Yeah, we had lengthy discussion with the lyricist and the co-lyricist. I wrote some lyrics as well, but with the lyricist on the record, that the theme, there was an overarching narrative of social justice ghost stories on the record, and that is we're telling the stories of the past martyrs and the fallen to shed light on the struggles of the present and hopefully light a sonic bonfire as a beacon towards a more just and humane future. So yeah, there's a lot of, you know, whether it's police brutality, which is addressed by Wu-Tang Clan and Lead Poisoning, or by Bass Nectar and Big Boy in Rabbit's Revenge, or, you know, bodies dropping on their way to the border in Roadrunner with Lakhali 47, or a whispered prayer through a death row prison wall in the Marcus Mumford song, Find Another Way. You know, we wanted to, you know, tell these kind of hidden, tell these ghost stories in 2018.
You're talking about, you know, finding out a lot of these artists, you know, were Rage fans growing up and everything.
Sure.
And I thought, especially when you're talking about those hip hop artists, when they have that frame of mind, I mean, it's hard not to at least have that like in the back of your mind, like this sort of sounds a little bit like Rage might have sounded in 2018, you know?
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, I'm the guitarist, so that part of it is, you know, is one of the sonic cornerstones, and you know, in the subject matter, there's certainly a lot to sing and rap about in 2018.
Worth noting, though, Battle of Los Angeles turns 20 next year.
Oh
and,
yeah,
I don't know. Do you celebrate Crazy. Those things? Does that pop up at all?
You know, it's certainly worth an Instagram post. Yeah, I mean, it is crazy. You know, I'm actually sitting in my den right now looking at the Battle of Los Angeles platinum record on the wall. So that's 20 years old. That is nuts.
Yeah.
That is, time flies.
I mean, I was thinking, like, you know, I gather while it's been, you know, while the band's been absent for almost 20 years, I mean, it's in your life every day. I mean, especially when you get on the phone on an interview or anything.
Sure. Yeah, sure. That's it. Yeah, yeah. And it's a you know, Rage and Audio Slave and Prophets of Rage and, you know, and the Night Watchman. Like it's been quite a journey of, you know, since I made this The Alice Underground is my 19th studio album.
Wow.
And yeah, and it's if you include the two Springsteen ones in there, you know, so it's pretty crazy.
And you're
gonna those four Rage records were a huge part of that.
Yeah, you're gonna be juggling like several of these next year, right? This is like your next year.
Yeah. We're working on more Prophets music. And I think there's, you know, the upcoming shows getting ready to be announced too. And the Atlas Underground, I've been doing this Atlas Underground experience tour, which is, you know, it's part discussion and part shredding my ass off, which has been really fun. But the proper Atlas Underground tour is going to happen in, you know, in 2019. I'm working with Sean Evans, who is the artistic director for Roger Waters for The Wall and for the Us and Them tours. And we're putting together something pretty special for 2019.
And we're talking about the live version here, right?
Yeah, the live version, yeah.
It seems like there's so many opportunities, whether it's just, you know, different artists coming in and out of the tour or
sure.
whatnot. I mean, I don't know how much you want to talk about that. It seems like there's still some secrecy there, but how do you present something of this scope live?
It's in the world. I mean, the idea, the challenge, the obvious challenge is Wu-Tang and Rise Against and Mumford & Sons and Steve Aoki, Bass Nectar, myself, et cetera, are not all going to fit on one tour bus.
Right.
And scheduling could be difficult in that regard. So my way of looking at the glass half full is we have to create a show that whether everybody shows up or nobody shows up, it's got to be really dynamic and compelling, and it's going to combine elements of, you know, sort of part art installation, part big rock show, part illegal 90s rave, part, you know, it's like there's a lot of disparate elements that are going to come crashing together to make something pretty exciting.
Trivial fact I was kind of curious about here too while we're on those the idea of the guests. I read at some part that you texted Dave Grohl to be on this record.
Yeah. I was making the Steve Aoki had sent me the mix of the song that became How Long, and it just totally rocked me. And I said, who do you think we should approach to sing at? And he said, I really love Tim McElrath from Rise Against, and I love Dave Grohl, and I think they, you know, either one of them would be great. And I said, I'll text them both and see who hits me back first. and Tim got the gig.
And Dave lost out. I mean, he's not hurting for, you know, something to do.
I love Dave. I had the great good fortune. I saw Dave the other day and had the great good fortune to, he's jammed a couple times with Prophets of Rage, where we have absolutely, you know, blown the roof off the joint playing with that guy. And I look forward to playing with him whenever, you know, I have the opportunity.
Yeah, selfishly, I want to hear that someday, that collaboration that could have been on a record like this.
Well, he's a great dude. There's that. That's, I'm sure there's that possibility is likely to happen.
Yeah, Prophets of Rage, what Heart of Fire came out in the summer. That's your latest, sure. Right?
Yeah. We've been in the studio on and off since then, working on what will be our next studio record.
Cool. And maybe 2019? Is that what you're eyeing?
Hopefully 2019, yeah.
Awesome. You know, to have so many different lives and births in this career, I mean, it's amazing what you pull off.
It is. I mean, I imagine myself when I joined my first high school band, I thought I would be in one band for my entire life. You know, I sort of, you know, I really thought like, I'm just going to dig in. This is going to be my band. And when Rage Against the Machine broke up, which was a global band, broke up, I really, you know, like that cliche of when a door closes, a window opens, like it led to, you know, a very richly satisfying, you know, audio slave life of global rock, you know, arena rocking, and then making four Night Watchman albums that are near and dear to my heart, and playing on picket lines and protests all over the globe, to playing in Street Sweeper Social Club with soon to be Oscar nominated Boots Riley, you know, to spending over the course of some 6 years playing on and off with Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band, and then the wonderful journey of the Prophets of Rage's band, and now making this Alice Underground record that I'm making music that I'm more excited about than anything I've made in my life, and it's pretty awesome. The one thing that I've stayed true to, really, like the first record that I made was a band called Lockup on Geffen Records, and that was a band that played by the rules. And I was 22 years old, and I thought, well, you know, record companies know best, and producers always know best. You know, what do I know? And we made a record that was compromised, and the record wasn't as good as the band. And I learned a lesson. The band got dropped, and at 26 or 27 years old, I had my grab at the brass ring, and I was done. I thought, well, if I'm not gonna, you know, make records or be a rock star, I'm going to make a solemn vow to myself to never play another note of music that I don't believe in. And I've stuck with that over the next 18 records, and that feels good.
And the stuff you're saying, I mean, we should definitely take the moment here at the end to talk about that too, because there are so many issues to put a bright spotlight on and to try to grasp. Sure. But one of those, you know, let alone as many as you do. And, you know, I notice what Hunger is a Crime seems to be, one of those spotlights for you right now. I mean, do you find yourself directed in one way more than others?
Yeah, well, I mean, on this record, Why Hunger is the organization that, you know, I've worked with for years, and I do believe that poverty and hunger are a crime, they're man-made, and the environment, of course, is a big deal. You know, now we're at a historical crossroads of life or death for the planet. With the song Every Step I Take, we've partnered with SAVE, which is a suicide prevention organization. That issue is very near and dear to my heart. If there's one overarching issue, however, it's I should mention one more, Color of Change, which is a criminal justice proponent, which we partnered with on the song Rabbit's Revenge. But if there's one overarching issue that has been through the entire body of work that I've been involved in, it's that of empowerment. And it's that the audience is the agent of change, and that history is not something that happens. History is something that you make, and that the people who have changed the world in progressive, radical, or even revolutionary ways had no more power, courage, intelligence, or creativity than anyone reading this article right now. It's just a matter of doing it, or abstaining, sitting on the sidelines, and letting some other sons of bitches drive this planet into a ditch. It's entirely up to you.
And I appreciate everything you're doing out there. I mean, it's your music has meant so much to my life, and it's taught me a lot.
Right,
the stuff that you're saying, you know, because it does point me in the direction. I mean, the things you're talking about, when I look at the chain link of those big issues, that hunger is a food distribution problem that affects the climate, that is consumption.
Right.
I mean, you know, and to kind of hold all of that.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's what we've been, you know, since the first Rage record to this Alice Underground record that we've been hammering away, is the people that own and control the planet don't deserve to. You deserve to, and your readers deserve deserve to. And it's, you know, it's in the interest of humanity that we should organize our society, not in the interest of the profit for a few.
Yeah. Well, Tom, thank you so much for what you do. Congratulations on the record. It's been so much fun talking to you as well.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Take care. We'll see you soon, hopefully.
All right, man. Take care.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Okay, bye.
And my thanks, Tom Morello. The new album, The Atlas Underground Fire. Big thanks to you for checking out the episode. Again, hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews that I put out, a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, Podchaser, NPR, YouTube for the video version, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. After that, head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern. It's an hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, and bonus interviews. It's Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on the social media spots, including Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, all three of them at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.